comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it is the show where you matter. I get asked sometimes, you know, why I get email where people ask me, why do you always make such a big deal out of that? You know, you run spots on the TV channel about you matter, and you say at the beginning of the show you matter. And I explained this last week or the week before, but let me explain it again because I'm still getting email. I don't mind. But see, here's the deal. It's the truth. And we live in a world that de-emphasizes that you really do matter. And although, you know, I never read any of the email that comes to me. I never read it on the air if it's somebody that's really depressed and down in the dumps, and I do respond to it, but I don't read it on the air. But we all have things that happen to us that sort of underscore for us that we just don't matter. Well, that's fiction. It's not true. We all really do really matter to the universe. And it just wouldn't be the same universe without you. So I like to remind us that each and every one of us matter. If you have not yet subscribed to our K-Files e-zine, be sure you do. It is absolutely free, and there's no strings attached. You subscribe, and that's it. It's we don't give your email address away or sell it or rent it or anything like that. It's absolutely just as it appears on the surface. It is what it is. It's our free weekly newsletter, and there's no reason for you not to get it. It always has links to interesting videos, interesting articles, inside scoop on what's happening here at the show. And there's really not any reason for you to be in the dark. So if you haven't subscribed, go over to my website if you're not there already. It is kevinsmithshow.com. Click the button that, or click the link that says K-Files and subscribe. We've made a couple of changes on the website just to make it easier to navigate. It's already dead bone easy, but we've made it even easier to navigate, and I hope you enjoy those. If you are not really sure what is it that's in the members area, you know, I mean, we publish it all the time and we talk about it all the time, but if you're not really sure, let's talk about what you're not getting by not being a member. You're not seeing the show. You're not getting to watch the latest show. You're not getting into our chat room. You're not getting into the forums. You're not getting to the free library of free ebooks that you can download. You're not getting to our video galaxy. And you don't get to take part in our monthly chat. And you don't, where I go into the chat room, and you don't get to be in on the video chats. It's 23 cents a day. That's all, 23 cents a day, and you get all of that. We'll be back with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle right after this. My guest this evening is Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle. Now, she's been with us before, and I'm pretty sure you remember. She is not the only person who has convinced a college to allow a course to be taught related to UFO and extraterrestrial reality, but she's one of the first, if not the first. I'm not sure about that, but I know she's one of the first. And we talked with her about work that she was doing with that college, and talked to her about the students and their response to it and so forth. And she is my guest tonight. A lot of water has gone under the bridge since she was with us. It's been a while. But Dr. Hardcastle, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's wonderful to speak with you and your listeners tonight. And I think it must have been about 4 or 5 years ago since the last time we spoke.
Since the last time we spoke on the show. Now, we've run into each other at events.
Definitely. But I think I taught the class, I believe it was in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Since then, you have, now you are teaching with the International Metaphysical University, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Also, what I really want to get into is you've developed a field, and I think you've probably coined the phrase or the word exoconsciousness as a result of your work with people who are contactees, who have had some kind of contact with UFOs or extraterrestrials. And we've heard about exopolitics, and we hear about exoplanets, and I coined the phrase exoeconomics, and here you've got exoconsciousness. And so let's start right there and let you define for us, what is exoconsciousness?
Well, interestingly enough, 2005 comes up again, because I created that concept of exoconsciousness back in 2005, and it just, one morning, it just came to me that that was the field that I was to develop and grow and nurture, along with people in exopolitics and, of course, exoeconomics. And that the formal definition is that it's the study and the practical applications of the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of our human consciousness. And I want to also add that I was thrilled that just this past month, exoconsciousness made it into Wikipedia.
I've made it into Wikipedia 3 times, and they've deleted it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they won't have it.
Oh, well, let's see how this goes, and, you know, maybe we can have another try out. We can talk about that off the air, but because, maybe we can help each other out in that.
Okay. Actually, I don't really care if I'm in Wikipedia or not, but guy who owned a network that I used to be on had put the entry into Wikipedia, and he did it 3 times, and all 3 times it was there for about 2 or 3 days, and then they deleted it. So,
well, we stayed up now for about a month now, several weeks. So the term exoconsciousness has stayed up, so we're very, heartened by that.
Okay, now this grew out of your work with contactees.
And also my own personal contact, as well as my work with contactees.
And as I understand it, based on what you said, it has to do with understanding the ET origin of our human consciousness.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about that. How do you know that our human consciousness is of extraterrestrial origin?
Well, one of when I began to define exoconsciousness, I define it by the twin pillars, and those twin pillars are quantum physics. So, what we know about quantum physics in terms of entanglement, holographic consciousness, just all of the different principles of quantum physics that feed into how we're starting the certainly Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. All of these quantum theories are moving into what is the second pillar of exoconsciousness, which is a new regard for subjectivity. And one of the ways that we know that there is an extraterrestrial origin to human consciousness is that we can look at this massive volume of contactee literature, not only from present day and contemporary history, but also spanning back into, you know, ancient and past history. And we know that there has been contact, and that has always been a subjective experience. And because of quantum physics today, we can look at, you know, how holograms form in our consciousness, or how we're entangled with other energies or sources of information, and begin to relate that then to extraterrestrial contact and extraterrestrial conscious contact via, you know, whether it's telepathy or clairaudience or clairsentience that we pick up, or just a basic knowing. So that's how I've begun to define exoconsciousness and its extraterrestrial origins. As well as, you know, you have such a volume of research on just the religious origins alone of extraterrestrial contact. I know that's been a field of yours for many years.
Yeah, but I would not say religious. I would say that there is the reality of the contacts that have been woven into religion.
And mythology,
mm-hmm.
as well as mythology, whether it's been a mythology formalized into religion or not. And interestingly enough, you and I share, you know, a lot of religious background, and that was my training. And I have a degree in philosophical theology, so mm-hmm. I developed this theory, you know, around those pillars of quantum science, as well as philosophy and theology, and, you know, ancient origins and ancient mythology and those types of fields. So I feel that as we're moving into looking at consciousness as in correlation with looking at craft sightings and authenticating craft sightings, we're also looking at what is an authentic subjective experience of an individual.
How, well, you know, every experience, I don't care what it is, every experience is subjective.
Yes.
There has to be an objective reality with which you are having an experience. Otherwise, that's either an illusion or it is delusion. So there is an objective reality that exists, and then we have a subjective experience with that. And everyone's experience will be pretty much unique. There'll be similarities from one person to another, but it has to be a little bit tailor-made for each of us, because we're experiencing it through the filter of our previous knowledge and previous beliefs.
Right. And belief systems are huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the definitive things about an experience, and that's one of the areas we can talk later on about that I've gotten into in terms of my exoconsciousness coaching, is helping myself as well as other people look at how do we form these belief systems, and to what extent are they just unconscious? We're not even aware that we're holding these belief systems until we're able to, as you say, objectify them to the extent that we can step outside of them and say, oh, you know, I really am operating maybe by a Newtonian belief system that I didn't even realize was part of what I even believe in. But but unconsciously, you know, it's part of my everyday reality.
Yeah, and now opinions are a really good example of this. People say all the time, I'm entitled to my own opinion, or I make up my own opinions. And the fact is, we don't. There's not an original opinion anywhere. Every opinion is based on other people's statements of their opinions. And then we take a little piece of this and a little piece of that, we glue it together, and we call that our opinion. But we got the pieces of it, the information for that opinion, from someone else. And I think that's the same with belief systems. We say, well, I have my own beliefs. No, you don't. You have adopted some beliefs, but believe me, there are millions, if not billions, of other people that have those same beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we take a piece here and a piece there and glue it together, and we say, well, that's my belief.
And that's, and you're talking about mass consciousness then at that
mm-hmm.
point, that we all participated.
To what degree do you think people who deny that there is a mass consciousness, I don't know how to ask this, to what degree do you think they have drifted into insanity?
Well, I think a part of that is to sit down and talk with someone that voices that opinion, there's that word again, and, you know, where does it come from, and how are they defining mass consciousness, and probably, you know, the devil's in the definition as to how they're defining it. But, you know, once you go into this whole field of consciousness, that, you know, consciousness studies at a university level, for example, have just now, they're in their infancy. It's only been since the 1990s since we've had accredited degree programs in consciousness studies. That's quite recent.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we began to probably post World War II, probably back in the 40s, you know, we began to look at public relations and how do you sway propaganda in terms of the masses, and, you know, looking at that in terms of our modern society. And I think at that point, you know, whether it's advertising or propaganda or, you know, groupthink or mind control, however you want to define it, that mass consciousness is a reality for most people. And to have the idea that you're not participating in it, then, you know, you have to ask a person, are they, you know, on the Internet, for example? I mean,
let me give you the group specifically that I'm targeting with that question. There is a very large segment of people who are psychiatrists and people who are psychologists that still even debate whether there is such a thing as the mind as being separate or apart from the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for a very large segment of those people, it is all biochemical.
Yes.
Okay.
And neurological.
Yes. Now, they're tinkering around with people's minds and committing some of them, a good number of them, to mental hospitals. And my question is, to what degree are those people stark raving nuts?
Well, I think any time you're broaching the subject of the medical field of psychiatry and, you know, the diagnostic desk model of a person coming into an office and, you know, looking at the diagnosis of what this person has and then, you know, prescribing a pharmaceutical drug for its, you know, for the management of the symptoms, and that's a very chemical, neurological based way of viewing humans. And it's interesting that you brought this up, because about 3 years ago, Christmas time, 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, I was invited to speak at the American Philosophical Association, and I was invited to speak on exoconsciousness and psychopathology. So in other words, to what extent has exoconsciousness been defined as a pathological disease, and how do we move out of that pathological disease model? And interestingly enough, there were philosophers, but many psychiatrists in attendance, and we had a really good discussion about what is a pathology and how is it defined and who defines it. And interestingly enough, most philosophers and psychiatrists come down on the side that culture, i.e. mass consciousness, defines psychopathology. So now we're facing a situation in our culture today in 2010 where, whether it's by movies or conferences or books or just talking in groups of people or on the internet, chatter or whatever, the whole culture is embracing contact. I mean, that's going to be the topic of the Phoenix conference here in April. April 10th is going to be embracing contact, and culture is embracing contact on a very elemental level. Now, once that happens and that's part of the mass consciousness, then the whole psychopathology shifts. Interesting. While I was talking with this group, I asked them, I said, you know, it's kind of doing some creative out-of-the-box thinking. I said, okay, there have been other groups and other belief systems that have shifted the definition of being a psychopathology. They've moved away from being a psychopathology, and the first one that came to my mind was homosexuality. What happened when homosexuals began to be embraced by the culture? So that conference would be called Embracing Homosexuality. What happens when homosexuality is embraced by the culture? Well, the American Psychiatric Association turns around and says, you know, they're no longer holding a belief system that homosexuality is psychopathological. In other words, it's normal.
Yeah, it's not a mental disease.
Right, it's not considered a mental disease. Now, how do we shift from exoconsciousness or contact no longer being defined by the psychiatric profession, the American Psychiatric Association, as a mental disease? Well, in the case of homosexuality, they simply took a vote.
So yesterday you were, if you were homosexual, yesterday you were crazy, and today you're normal, just because of a vote.
Because of a vote. It was taken out of the DSM, and it was regarded as a normal biological, chemical, whatever state of being. And you know, quite frankly, that was primarily due to the shift in culture and the shift in the mass consciousness. And I believe in my heart, I mean, I was just at a MUFON meeting the other day, and there was a psychiatrist there that's, you know, very active in working with people who've had contact.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. Rebecca Hardcastle, Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle, is with us this evening. And Dr. Hardcastle, you were telling us about a psychiatrist at a conference that you were at.
Oh, yes. I was just amazed at how, you know, the medical profession and some members in the medical profession as well as the psychiatric profession are embracing contact also, and they want to know how to address and communicate with people who have had contact. So I think once those old barriers and beliefs and assumptions that everybody that claims to have had contact is crazy, once those are gone, then I think we're looking at a whole redefinition of what contact means. And when we do that, we're looking at a revolution in how we perceive our consciousness. And what we'll be doing at that point is looking at, you know, what does psychic ability mean for people? What does it mean when people talk about communicating with beings in another dimension or holding another dimensionality? And that's opening the whole area of psychic intelligence in a brand new way. When I teach exoconsciousness, one of the sessions that I teach is embracing what I call the ninth intelligence, based on Howard Gardner's work at Harvard, who came up with the concept of multiple intelligences. He has about 8 intelligences that he defines. He wanted to step out of the flat IQ, in other words, flat landing IQ, and just saying, you know, IQ is just based on mathematical, linear, logical abilities. And he came up with what I believe now are about 8 different kinds of intelligences, which include musical, spatial intelligence, like a pilot or a navigator would have spatial intelligence, kinesthetic intelligence that an athlete would have, interpersonal intelligence that salespeople have, intelligence that a philosophically inclined person could have. People that have an intelligence about nature is kind of a natural intelligence that he's defined. And I laid a 9th intelligence on top of that, and I'm going to be writing more about it in my next book, but talking about, you know, what is the natural psychic intelligence that humans possess, and what does that mean to us, and how does that connect us to multiverses or dimensions beyond how we see ourselves. It's very dramatic. I mean, it's...
Well, that brings up 2 questions.
Okay.
Everything that you've just said brings up 2 big questions. First, I want us to discuss defining what it means to embrace contact, and then secondly, the impact this has on the accepted scientific method. All right, so when we talk about someone embracing contact, what are we talking about? They are accepting that contact has happened and that it is happening, or that they accept the idea that it will happen?
Well, I think it goes back to the whole idea of subjectivity. I think for some people, embracing contact means that they're accepting and open of the fact that they've had contact. For other people who are maybe aren't consciously aware that they have had contact, but they know people who have, then they would embrace it on that level. And then, you know, there's certainly people out there who, you know, don't want to hear anything about any kind of psychic or extraterrestrial contact, who would, you know, deny the entire category. But, you know, once you move into quantum physics, everything becomes energy and information. And, you know, not only can you talk to these energies that hold information outside of yourself, but you can communicate and dialogue with energies within you, within your body, within the organs in your body. I use hypnotherapy with people, and a lot of them have chronic diseases. And one of the things we do is literally, and with the aid of the subconscious and a hypnotic state, literally go in and talk to their bodies. You know, what's going on with their pancreas? What's going on with their thyroid? What's happening with their heart? What's the information that those cells in the body want to communicate and bring forth? It's a whole new way of looking at our consciousness and the abilities that our consciousness possesses naturally.
All right. Because of the fact that what we're talking about, when we talk about embracing contact, we talk about contact, at its core, we're talking about an experience. And that doesn't, as I said, if it's a real experience, there had to be objective reality with which we interacted in order to have that experience. Otherwise, it's delusional. So there has to be reality there. However, let's talk about the impact that embracing contact would have upon the scientific method. Because the scientific method ignores experience, and the scientific method says if you repeat the exact same thing that scientist did and do it exactly the same way, then you should be able to get the same results, and it's all quantified and all objectified. Mm-hmm. And so it completely ignores subjective data. It completely ignores experience. But if you embrace contact, now you're talking about something that cannot be replicated because it is personal experience.
Well, I would challenge the whole concept that you just outlined in terms of scientific method, because I think what you outlined is a very Newtonian, mechanistic, billiard ball kind of quantifiable reality. You move.
But it is the scientific method accepted all establishment science.
It has been established as our scientific method. I totally mm-hmm. agree with that. And I also know that on a quantum level, all bets are off. I mean, on a quantum level, with Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, once you begin to measure something and quantify it and observe it, you change it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the quantification is, in that sense, it's not going to be the scientific method of everything, all the ducks in a row. You're looking at waves and particles and interactions and entanglements that exist on a level of science that's very different. And therefore, your belief system about the information that you're gaining has to change along with it. And I think that, would we even, Kevin, be having this conversation today, the same conversation today? We probably couldn't have had it, 75 years ago. Maybe not 10 years ago. That's mm-hmm. true. But with quantum physics and that's opened all the doors for the ability to look at contact and these subtle levels of energy and information. People who are energy healers are talking about making quantifiable changes that are measurable, whether with prayer or Reiki or Joe Ray or any type of metaphysical consciousness healing. They're literally seeing quantifiable changes. I mean, Dean Radin, in terms of ESP and all the work that he's doing with ESP and mental telepathy, it's a very small margin, but it's a quantifiable margin.
The reason I brought it up is because I think the scientific method works well when we're talking about chemical reactions or if we're talking about any kind of physical reactions. But the problem... And I point this out on the show all the time, and I even did this with Dr. Michio Kaku when he was on the show. The problem is that the universe does not have a PhD. The universe didn't go to school and learn that it has to operate by these laws. Mm-hmm. It just does what it does. And as we are discovering our universe more and more and more, we're discovering things that aren't operating according to the alleged laws.
Yes.
They are doing what they do, and that doesn't fit those laws. And I have said, and I still maintain, there are no laws of physics. What we call laws of physics are merely descriptions of our observations. And merely descriptions of our current understanding. Okay? So, I think the impact of embracing contact, the impact of that is it will make it possible for some smart person to come up with some theories that step right over these laws of physics that are keeping us from being able to fly to other star systems.
Absolutely.
Keeping us earthbound. And, one of the concepts that I have a lot of people that argue with me about it in person, we have some lively debates, mm-hmm. is that when you go faster than the speed of light, you're going at the speed of dark because you're outrunning the reflection of the light.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that have to do with embracing contact? Well, I think it has a lot to do with it, because what you're talking about is being in entirely different, I don't even know if you say universes or dimensions. I'm not sure that either one of those words adequately describes what happens. But you're talking about moving in places we didn't know existed.
And we're in the process of developing a vocabulary to even talk about concepts that you're sharing right now with the audience, because we can look at concepts like a multiverse that mm-hmm. people in physics are looking at in terms of the Big Bang. You know, is the Big Bang theory holding? Is it being called into question? And one of the ways it's being called into question is with this whole theory of multiverses or bubbles. You know, are they simultaneous, or does one bubble birth another bubble? And then you look at multiverses, but not every multiverse has dimensionality. You know, perhaps dimensionality, it only applies to certain multiverses, like our world, our Earth world dimensions that most of us live in and live our day-to-day world. It has a three and four dimensionality to it. Well, there are many people who are psychic, and they're moving into fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth dimensionality, and with astral travel or whatever, bringing back information. Now, they may go travel. Our consciousness may someday be going into multiverses that do not possess dimensionality. Now, that's a whole different ballgame there. And, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity at that point becomes, you know, what exactly are we talking about here? So, yes, I totally agree with you. We're in a very a time of just revolutionary scientific thought. And as we go into these times, that's why the whole embracing contact is so important, because the ability of our consciousness to go into even think about the possibility that we could go into.
Rebecca, I hate to do it. We have to step away for a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. We'll be back, folks. Talking with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle, and we're talking about her field of study and her field of expertise. She teaches courses in it. She's the developer of it. It is called Exoconsciousness. Now, you know, some of what we've been discussing, you may say, oh my God, that's way too complicated for me to think about. But you know something? I've talked, Dr. Hardcastle, with some people who have had contact, and they felt like, oh my God, I don't understand it all. And what happened was they got a download of information that was all about this stuff we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They experienced it and had no way really to cope with what they experienced, no way to understand it. And it's hard. Like, you're talking about dimensions that have no dimensionality, or universes that have no dimensionality. And there are people thinking, how can that be? Well, we're not really sure how, in terms of being able to write some equation for it. And yet, quantum physicists have postulated it, and people who have traveled out of their body, astral travel, have experienced it. And as you said, we don't even have the vocabulary to talk about it. How can you describe, I'm going to give you a little bit of a challenge here, Dr. Hardcastle. How can you describe a universe that has no dimensionality?
I would describe it as being beyond the bounds of time and space and any other dimensions. And, you know, to affirm what you just said, just the fact that we can have a dialogue about a multiverse without dimensionality means that there is some part of our consciousness that's already conceiving that. And because some part of our consciousness is conceiving that, our consciousness is holographic, and it's part of every part of our being. And have I experienced it? No, but I must have experienced it to be talking to you about it. So, you know, I do hypnotherapy. I do a lot of consciousness work with myself. I teach, you know, the different methods of and abilities of our consciousness. And when you move into that realm, you begin to talk about things that you experience, but yet you don't have the math or the language or even maybe the conscious experience to communicate it. And yet, you know, if you're communicating it, you must have experienced it. It's like people that have a near-death experience. I mean, how do they come back and talk about it? And certainly, you know, Paul Perry's new book that just came out is, you know, a discussion of that. That one thing they found out is that, as you spoke about earlier, there's a lot of similarities to experiences, and people begin to share that. And I totally agree with you about the download phenomenon. It's awe-inspiring. And I just back in 2008, I guess it was, I published Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind, and I talked in there about what it means to have a download and what happens to us when we get a download, as you were talking about. And that's a reality to people who are contactees. They get downloads, and they are telepathically communicated with, and they are told that a download's coming, and we receive it. And in my life, I can literally look at times when, for example, I've been so fortunate. Terry Mansfield and I are working with Edgar Mitchell's Quantrek Group as co-directors of Peace Exoconsciousness. Now, here I am working with, you know, former astronaut Edgar Mitchell, sixth man to walk on the moon, you know, scientists from Harvard to Stanford to, you know, from one end of the planet to the other. And, you know, here I am with a philosophical theology major and a parapsychic science major, and yet on a level I can have an understanding at some level of what the dialogue is. And there will be days when literally I will be told and feel that these downloads of information and energy are coming into my consciousness, that I am receiving from beyond my brain, coming into my consciousness. And sure enough, a day or two later, sometimes two hours later, an hour later, I'll come across some scientific theory or a scientific concept that I, on some level, understand, and I know it's because of the download.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can I phrase this? Okay, you have embraced contact. Is that why you are able to have this experience of downloads and be able to, in some way, wrap your mind around it and in some way talk about it, where people who have not embraced contact and yet it happens to them are very often very disturbed by what's happened to them? Is that the difference, that you've embraced contact and they haven't? Is that what makes the difference? They're disturbed and you're not?
Now, I think the difference is, I'm glad you brought up this discussion, because one of the reasons that I got into this work is because of the work of John Mack. And John Mack talked about fencing the fear. In other words, when people would come to him who had contact, he would work with them and get them beyond the fear of the fact that they had contact, to the point where John talked about the contactees then would move into a spiritual kind of metamorphosis via the contact experience. and they would change. You know, many of them go into peacemaking or green energy or free energy or exopolitics or exoconsciousness. You know, people who have these experiences seem to move in certain avenues of work after the experience. And so I've been very fortunate to live in Scottsdale, Arizona. And here in Scottsdale, through my work and in coaching and hypnotherapy, I began to learn a lot personally about trauma. You know, what trauma has done to me in my life, what trauma does to my clients, how, you know, whether it's verbal or mental or physical or sexual trauma, literally we are finding out scars our brain. And you can literally look at a person's neurological scarring, and an expert can look at the scarring pattern that a person has undergone and say, the blueprint of the scars in your brain can tell me what diseases you're going to manifest in your life. And for some people, having extraterrestrial contact is a traumatic brain scarring experience because our culture hasn't embraced it. Our culture has seen it as negative, as scary. You know, you watch, you know, this plethora of Hollywood movies, many of which, you know, it's the aliens and the predators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a fun situation. Contact via Hollywood is not something anyone would ask for. It's a traumatic experience. When the truth of my life has been that it has not been traumatic, nor was it ever traumatic. There was a time when I was about 12 that I started to figure out the fact that contact wasn't exactly a topic that I should bring up at the dinner table or in my, you know, fifth or sixth grade classroom. I kind of got that concept. And as a result of that, you know, my socialization, I moved away from it. But one of the things that we're able to do today because of technology's link with consciousness is that people are able to literally use technology and sound, visualization, and different consciousness techniques to literally break up and remove and dissolve the scars in their brain.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Special welcome to those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. We're glad you're here. We're talking with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle, and we're talking about her field of study, which is exoconsciousness. She is a professor at the International Metaphysical University. She has taught college courses here in the Phoenix area on UFO and extraterrestrial reality. She's been on the show before, and we're delighted to have her back with us again tonight. But we're talking about exoconsciousness, which, as I understand the term, has to do with understanding the extraterrestrial origins of our human consciousness. And Dr. Hardcastle, in just a moment, we're going to open the telephone line so people can call in and talk with us. We've kind of been talking about exoconsciousness on entry-level, perhaps, but college-level terms. But let's talk about how does this study of exoconsciousness, how does this help someone who has had contact? In what ways can it help someone who's had contact?
One of the ways that it helps persons and that it's been a benefit to me in my life is that this field of exoconsciousness, as it grows, it allows us to gather, you know, data and information and experiences such that, as we spoke about earlier, the culture itself, there begins to be an accumulated body of knowledge around what are the extraterrestrial origins in terms of, you know, our genetic heritage or our religious or mythological heritage, as well as the different dimensions that our consciousness moves in. You know, people need to have, you know, groups or books or have a forum to share what's happened in their experiences. You know, it's no different than, you know, what's coming about today with the whole near-death experiences. You know, people are looking at that body of knowledge now and saying, oh, you know, I've had a similar experience. I had a near-death experience, and the same information came to me in the same way, and that gives that subjective validity to an experience that for a long time wasn't even discussed by anyone. And another thing that exoconsciousness does is it gives us a forum, you know, whether it's, you know, taking the exoconsciousness course or reading about it or sharing information, where people can go out and get together and talk about, this is the exoconsciousness ability that I'm manifesting. You know, I'm learning how to astral travel, or I'm learning how to stretch my consciousness into other realms and other dimensions and possibly other multiverses. I'm learning to astral travel. I literally can telepathically speak with people who are close to me. I know I've got a presentience of what the future holds for me, or, you know, I get information in a download. And all of these are abilities. That's what I love about exoconsciousness, that it's not just the study, but it's the practical applications. And people getting together and sharing that knowledge, whether it's on the internet or radio shows like yours, that's what's going to propel us into the era of, like Edgar Mitchell's Quantrek group works with, of free energy. Those are the scientists and the thinkers and the creative people that are going to bring that reality of free energy into our world today.
I think it's interesting. You know, you brought up that you're working with Edgar Mitchell's group. Dr. Mitchell has an aerospace engineering degree from MIT. Mm-hmm. And it's here in the United States of America, you would be very hard pressed to top that. That is about the creme de la creme. When you're talking about engineering and you have a doctorate degree from MIT in engineering, you've pretty well arrived. Now, what's interesting is that degree is all about hard physics. And yet, here is a guy who, after going to the moon, and in fact, while he was still in flight back from the moon, said things about what an impact it had had on him. And almost immediately began to talk about, as soon as he was back here on Earth, he began to talk about things that people consider to be metaphysical. Mm-hmm. And you can't top the hard physics, hard engineering type studies that he's done and earned a doctorate degree in that field. You can't top it, and yet there is this metaphysical, I'll use the word dimension, to him. And so the reason I bring that up is because, you know, down here, us mere earthlings who are not Edgar Mitchell, there is sort of a resistance built in. We're afraid people will think this about us, or we're afraid people will think that about us. And I think that's sort of built in to pushing away mm-hmm. from contact experiences that people have had, they push away from it emotionally with that fear of what other people think. Part of growing, I think, is getting to the point where what other people think really is not that big a deal to you.
I agree. I agree completely. And it's interesting that you bring up Edgar's work in terms of consciousness, because when he was going to the moon, he set up an experiment of telepathy to be for telepathic messages to be, you know, given to him for him to telepathically communicate back. And that's, you know, that's even then he was moving it into a quantifiable kind of consciousness study clear out in space. And one of the reasons that I developed exoconsciousness and just stay so engaged with not only my personal experience as a contactee, but also just looking at culture and saying, you know, if we are a spacefaring race, you know, the whole, you know, the space shuttle work is being commercialized, space travel is being commercialized. I mean, that's the next step of us becoming, as humans, a spacefaring race. And once you're out in space and your computer goes and you need to communicate, you know, telepathy is a natural human evolvement. We need to develop our telepathy. Now, are there repercussions for that? Well, yeah, you know, the national security state and secrets are going to have to go by the wayside. But it's you know, as you said, it's an either or. Either we're going to stay where we are, or we're going to progress as a spacefaring race. And one of the main things that I am committed to in terms of me embracing my contact is working with Terry Mansfield, who is an international peace diplomat of great renown, especially here in Arizona. And we are co-directors of Peace Exoconsciousness. You know, I take very, very seriously Colonel Corso's mandate from the aliens that, you know, if we go into galactic citizenship, that either we go in peace or we don't go. Now, you know, when you look at the Oscars and, you know, the movie that garnered the most Oscars last night was Hurt Locker, I believe it's called. And one of the whole themes of Hurt Locker is war is a drug. You know, war is a traumatic drug. And going back to the whole idea of trauma, that's what happens to people. You know, that's one of the specialties that I deal with with people is, you know, what's happened to me and what's happened to you in terms of trauma. And one of the things that happened is that trauma is like a drug, whether it's the trauma of war or the trauma of abuse or the trauma of violence, that we get in these familiar neurological pathways of trauma scars, and we just keep running up the same path and then back down. You know, it's like our brains are accustomed, that is our familiar. And only now are we learning how to literally, using science and technology and sound and visualization, to move out of those scars where we can let go of the familiar and we don't have to drug ourselves anymore with our trauma. And when that happens, then we move to a place of peace that we are only now beginning to even understand what that means. I mean, what would it mean to be a peaceful, space-faring civilization? You know, what does that mean culturally? What's that going to mean epigenetically? You know, epigenetics is talking about how our environment affects our DNA and our genetics. And epigenetics is saying that there is a very viable, quantifiable change that goes on when you change someone's environment. When you change their environment, their genetics changes. What happens when we change the environment around exoconsciousness and we embrace contact? How's that going to change our bodies? Maybe one of the ways it's going to change our bodies is we're going to begin to live longer without disease.
Now, that means if that happens, then we absolutely have to become a spacefaring people. because we will be living longer without disease, and that means the population will explode. If we think there's been a population explosion up till now, we ain't seen nothing yet. When we don't die after 75, 80, 90 years.
And that's happening already.
And we began to live 200, 300, 400 years. You know, we're going to run out of food. We're going to run out of water. We're going to run out of space to live. So we have to become spacefaring.
Well, I think, you know, what you're talking about, I think that probably also our diet's going to change dramatically.
What do you think it's, how will it change?
I think a lot of people that have contact move to a very different diet. I think that a lot of them are vegan, some are vegetarians, some are, you know, eat very little, if any, meat. Just in terms of how their digestive system changes when you've had contact. I mean, it's just, that's happening right now. You know, whether, you know, if you're part of a fast food nation, you're going to slow down your metabolism and you're going to slow down your mental ability. I mean, it makes you sluggish in all ways. You know, whether it's sweets or deep fried food or whatever, it slows you down.
Well, whenever we began to embrace exoconsciousness and we begin to embrace contact, how do you think that's going to, you know, you talked about it'll change our culture. I can perceive ways in which it's going to change, for instance, the moods of people and their attitudes towards one another. But let's talk about hard culture. How is it going to show up in music? How is it going to show up in movies? How is it going to show up in poetry, in literature?
Well, I feel that one of the responsibilities of people that have embraced contact is that we need to all become models, that we need to learn how to model things like peace. And things like, you know, how I live my life so that I am sustaining and enriching my life force as opposed to depleting my life force. I mean, that's a huge issue for me, you know, what depletes my life force and what sustains and enlivens my life force. And usually, you know, quite frankly, it's an either-or situation. And a lot of times in my coaching, I use that. You know, is this a life path for you or a death path for you?
Mm-hmm. But how is this going to be reflected in our art?
Well, I think it's already reflected in terms of the art of cinema. And, you know, certainly when Steve Bassett has his exopolitics conference, he always has a great many artists. As a matter of fact, the woman that designed the New York Art Walk, she founded, was one of the founders of the New York Art Walk, called me the other day, and you know, she wants to have an entire showing in New York City this fall done by artists who've had contact and bring the whole concept of exoconsciousness as a part of the art exhibit. Jeff Peckman, who has the extraterrestrial initiative in Denver, Colorado, just released a great video called Pink UFO by a rapper. And I mean,
I have to say, though, you know, I applaud his creativity, and it's funny and it's creative, but Jeff, you ain't no rapper, buddy.
But the question comes down to it, you know, Jeff's modeling for us. You know, put yourself out there, you know, do your Pink UFO rap and dance and put yourself out there. I mean, either the people, the individual citizens of Earth, either we're the ones that are going to define what embracing contact means, or it's going to be done for us by Hollywood or by a propaganda machine or by people who don't want to encourage contact because they've got too much to lose. I mean, you know, either we're going to do it or we're going to step back and be subsumed by someone else doing it.
Well, I agree with what you say, but I would say at the same time, no matter what you do, Hollywood will try to define you.
Oh, absolutely.
Hollywood is an industry that primarily caters to mushrooms. And so, you know, they go for lowest common denominator at everything. And I don't say that as an indictment, as something that's negative about Hollywood. It's just a reality. Because they're after the bucks, and so they cater to the lowest common denominator. And, they will probably continue to define all aliens as hostile, and they will continue to define people who have contact as being a little bit deranged for quite some time. I think it'll be a while before they change. But you're right. We need to take the bull by the horns,
yeah.
And we need to define for ourselves who we are. Let me give the telephone numbers very quickly. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephones are open, and the telephone numbers are 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, if you're in the USA or Canada, is 888-223-4599. Now, if you can call us without it costing you long distance, call us on 623-444-5889. If you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can use our flash message feature on my website, or you can call us at 623-444-5889. And we would be glad to have your questions and your comments. Now, you may be listening to this tonight, you're a contactee. You've got some questions about how all of that has hit you. Maybe it hit you like a tsunami. You've got some questions that Dr. Hardcastle maybe could help you with. Well, there are the numbers. They're on your screen if you're watching on our TV channel. And I've just given them out to you. I'll give them again. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Maybe everything we've talked about here tonight sounds like mumbo jumbo to you, and that's your opinion, and you would like to express it. Well, you can do that on this show. As long as you don't make personal attacks, you can do that. Whatever it is that's on your mind about this subject of exoconsciousness, we would like to hear it. So let's go to the telephone, and caller, your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria, Vancouver Island.
Hello, Haya.
Hello, how are you? Very
good.
Lovely talk tonight. I was listening to what Rebecca was saying about if we lived a lot longer, and I do agree with her. I also would state that the longer we're going to live, the more we're going to be forced to change and look at things, because there's a lot of work to be done, cleaning up the planet, start being more conscious of other people. It will create a whole paradigm change.
Hi, Hyacinth. I totally agree. we're all just going to be transformation and change. It's funny, we just moved recently, and my little 12-year-old looked at me and he goes, I don't like to move. I don't like change. And I went, oh, sweetheart, that's the way of the world.
Yeah, my daughter, when she was younger, the same. She didn't like change at all. And here I am. I love change. I look forward to it. And I think programs like Kevin's are wonderful.
Absolutely.
And I think yourself coming out, you're like a Dr. Mac. You're coming out and you're speaking up, and it's nice to know.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to hear you speak up, too. It's great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hiya, thanks for the call. Yeah, see, one of the things that I say on this show, Dr. Hardcastle, I say it very often, is I say it right at the beginning of the show, is this is the show where you matter. And the reason I say that every night is because we live in a world that tells us all day long, hey, you know what, you don't really matter. And that's just a lie. It's not true. We do matter. And I think exoconsciousness sort of helps us to get into that shirt. That, hey, you know what? I do matter.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Hardcastle.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Is there a way with your exopolitics and the universes that maybe I could take one of your classes online, or is there some book I can read to experience, you know, going? I mess a little bit with the astral travel. I wasn't able to do it, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I teach, as Kevin's referred to a couple times, I teach at the International Metaphysical University. You know, what you might want to do, Rusty, is go to my website, exoconsciousness.com, or just Google my name, Rebecca Hardcastle, H-A-R-D, as in dog, C-A-S-T-L-E, Rebecca Hardcastle.
Okay, both of you, hang on for just a moment. We have to step away for a break. We'll come back to both of you right after this. If I can get the right buttons clicked here, we'll get our TV channel back on track. There we go. And we have as our guest this evening, Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle. And holding on the line is Rusty from Michigan. So, Rusty, I wanted you to be able to get the answer from Dr. Hardcastle. And that's why I asked you to hang on. So, Doctor, if you will just go ahead and finish your answer about how he can contact you.
I was just going to offer, Rusty, you could just actually Google my name, which might be easier, and then from there go to exoconsciousness. And then within the exoconsciousness site, just click on the part that's about Rebecca Hardcastle, and that actually, within that write-up, it gives an outline of my course that I'm teaching at International Metaphysical University. And or okay. You can go to their website, which is intermetu.com. intermetu.com, and you can click on there. They actually have what I believe is the first in the nation, an actual department in ufology, which is, you know, extremely exciting. Susan Rollins is the dean of the Department of Ufology. You know, Kevin, you might want to have her on as a guest sometime.
I've got her on the list.
Oh, great, great. She's, you know, it's just exciting what she's done and the people she's brought together. And I was just so honored to be a part of the faculty and to be able to teach, you know, exoconsciousness and share with, you know, people like Rusty to bring their experiences and their knowledge. I mean, This is a body of knowledge, and it's exciting that we are birthing this together.
Rusty, thank you for the call. I hope that was helpful to you. We've got a couple of flash messages we need to get to. We've got one from Troy in the United Kingdom. And great guest with deep insight. Does Rebecca see these insights and empathy that she possesses? Do you see those in people who have never, to their knowledge, had ET contact? And is it possible that some of these people, like mediums and so forth, maybe have had contact and are simply not aware of it?
Oh, absolutely. But that's a wonderful question. I would never presuppose with a client or a student or, you know, anyone that I was dialoguing with to presuppose to tell somebody that, oh, you've had contact, you just don't know about it. I think there's lots of different levels of information within the world that these new ideas are coming to us, and I would, you know, far be it from from me to say this is the only channel of information available. You know, this is the channel that that I'm on. You know, extraterrestrial intelligence is something that's just giving me so much meaning, and as your the person wrote in, it's given me a lot of depth and breadth to my life. I mean, I've literally developed a whole different belief system, which to go back to our initial discussion, this belief system that I've created is the result of my contact experience and bringing that into my conscious awareness. And I think a lot of people are coming forth with different types of contact, and I'm, you know, eager to hear about it. Consciousness is something that, as you know, we talked about earlier, it's in its infancy as a course of study, certainly, and as our understanding. It's growing every day.
All right, we have a flash message from Blue in Australia. He's got two questions. First, he would like to know if you think that contact with ETs affects the human aura.
I think so. Yeah, I absolutely. I think that contact with extraterrestrials, especially, you know, I'm one. I've had, you know, Kevin, I've had extensive contact in my life, and you know, I write about it in my book. I've had contact with reptilians, with grays, with, you know, the mantis beings, with, you know, sort of indigenous people, supernatural entities. I've worked as a medium before. I have just a real faith and trust in my extraterrestrial abilities, as well as my psychic abilities. And, you know, that's just... that's changed my belief system. It's changed my genetics. It's changed.
Well, it would then have to change your aura.
Yeah, and it's changed my aura, absolutely. And that's a fabulous question.
You know, all right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We need to start collecting data on, you know, before contact and after contact aura photographs.
Yeah, that's a good
aura
idea.
Yeah. Change. You know, day by day and minute by minute, too. So,
all right, we'll take his second question in just a moment. We're going to take this telephone call right now. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, John.
You were wondering, but can't describe this. Kind of wondering, like, without dimensions, how can you get a difference in perspective, something like that?
How can a universe exist that has no dimension?
Right, okay. I'll just try and run this short. I did a painting with five pairs in it, and I was trying to name the painting, and my first thought was I could call it Take Five. And then I went to, well, what if I called it 2 plus 3 equals 5? And then I got kind of obsessed about equals. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, if 2 plus 3 is sort of the same as 5, then why would you state the difference? So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, well, even though equals means same as or equivalent to, it's not. Like 2 plus 3, like there's any number of combinations that I could have looked at with the pairs, you know, the end 2 plus the middle 3 or so on and so forth. So there's a virtual difference. That's what really got me is mm-hmm. there's a difference in perspective without actually introducing the idea of dimensions. Mm-hmm. 2 plus 3 is a different perspective from the number 5.
Absolutely.
And so that got me into, like, the whole idea of virtual reality where mm-hmm. you can have differences in perspective without actual dimensions. And mm-hmm. that's sort of what equations and numbers refer to. Now, I don't know if that makes sense. I think that's a phenomenal illustration,
especially, you know, bringing in the virtual reality, you know, that
reflects
back. That is just brilliant, and thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, John, thanks for the call. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, 2 + 3 on the one hand is the same as 1 + 4, but then again, it isn't.
Right. It's amazing. That's a great insight.
All right, the telephone lines are open. And we will take your calls at 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
How is everyone tonight?
Outstanding, as usual.
Hello, Dr. Hardcastle. How are you?
I'm fine, Mike. I'm from Ohio, so I know Kentucky well.
Yeah, well, I live in western Kentucky, right across on the Ohio River, across from Evansville, about 40 miles. So there you are.
Good.
You should know where that's at.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
All right.
Wonderful.
You're talking about how the experience changes consciousness, and that's definitely so, because I had experienced a living out-of-body experience through the tunnel thing. And prior to that, I had a lot of doubts about whether that experience was even valid, even though I had read about it and heard about it. But after the experience, well, I knew it was, and so your whole consciousness changes because of it. Something that you wondered about before, all of a sudden, you don't wonder about it anymore. It is.
Mm-hmm. That's a great illustration. It's part of your belief system now.
Well, I like to say that you either know something or you don't. And if mm-hmm. you don't know it, you try to find it out. Experience is the way I try to find things out.
You know, it's so interesting that you bring this up, because for about 8 years, I worked at a technical school, like a voc ed school, a vocational education school. And I kept thinking, you know, why am I working here? There was kind of a combination of a high school and a post-secondary. They had college courses that they offered also. And you know, I was a busy mom, you know, I was divorced, raising my kids, and I'm like, you know, wow, what am I doing here? Actually, Kevin, I met you when I was working at that school. That's when I started, you know, teaching extraterrestrial reality at Scottsdale Community College. And one of the reasons I think I was at that school was because I learned the value of experience, as, you know, the caller just outlined. You know, once you experience something, you understand the concept. You know, you retain 80 to 90% of the information through an experiential education, as opposed to, you know, rote academic learning, whether using memory or concepts. You only retain about 20%. So I think we as a species are finding out that, you know, when we embrace subjective experience, people learn things in new ways, and our intelligence changes.
It does, and I fall on the same side of the fence as Mike on this, though, in that I understand what you're saying when you say belief system, but a lot of what you're referring to, I would say, once you experience it, there's no need to believe.
Right.
Once you experience something, you've experienced it. It's sort of like there was a time before you ever kissed anyone from the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you remember back, used to watch, you know, the movies and, mm-hmm. you know, used to talk to all your friends about, oh, I wonder what that's like. Well, you didn't have to wonder anymore. Once you kiss somebody from the opposite sex, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but now I may be getting out of Mike's league. I'm not sure Mike has ever done that.
No, not on your life.
Come on, Mike.
Mike, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
But it really is like that. And I mean, I use that example because that's something everyone can relate to. There was a time when you wondered, and now you know.
Right.
And
It's interesting that this discussion around belief, because I think you and I both know, and I'm sure all your listeners and callers know too, that, you know, this whole extraterrestrial knowledge, extraterrestrial intelligence that is part of our consciousness, that it is causing us to redefine our belief system. And it's kind of like beliefs aren't what they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to go away for a break. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right, you hang in there. We'll get to you first up. We'll be back, folks, right after this. All right, welcome back. We're on Final Approach. We have a caller online. We're going to take that call first up. And then right after that, the second question from Blue over in Australia. Okay. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Ohio.
Hello, Mark.
Hello. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Rebecca. I wondered if you would feel comfortable sharing a little bit of your personal contact story.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to. My first conscious memory of contact here on Earth was around the age of 3. I had ongoing contact during that time and went to sort of a young people's star school, I suppose you would call it. I have, you know, very, very vivid memories of what happened to me. People have come into my life now with whom I was, you know, in this star education with, and, you know, I'm actually working with some of them today. I had very, very vivid contact as a child, and then as it was never frightening to me. It was just a natural part of who I was. And then about, 11 or 12 years old, you know, socialization kicked in, and I moved away from contact and kind of moved out into the world and became, you know, a full-fledged Earth being. And then college, I began to reawaken, but really it was into my adulthood when I just came, you know, as we're talking about embracing contact in this Phoenix conference that's going to be April 10th. I literally began to embrace my contact as an adult, and it was a very different experience again in some ways than what it was as a child. I was had all the socialization baggage that I did not have as a child, and I write about it in my book about how literally I went to star school as an adult again and was re-educated and reawakened, and I see clients that have the same kind of pathway of this awakening in adulthood, and then this whole remembrance of what happened to them also as children. So is that what you were interested in hearing, or did you want other specifics?
Oh, no, that was very good. And I had one other quick question. I'll hang up and listen off the air.
All right.
If you could comment on the Billy Meyer case, my favorite contactee. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thanks for the call.
Mark, I'm not a Billy Meyer expert. I've read certainly the Billy Meyer literature. Paolo Harris is a good friend of mine. She's, you know, interviewed Billy Meyer, and people like Michael Horn certainly are bringing the Billy Meyer information forward. I'm not sure how he wants me to comment on it, other than, you know, Billy Meyer seems to be a contactee, certainly, and there's been a lot of verification around his photographs and witness recounting and the information that he brought forth and he shares with the world.
Okay, let's take Blue's second question from Australia, and we'll try to... We've just got a couple of minutes here, but we'll try to get this in. Do you think society finds UFO and ET information to be a dogma due to the ridicule factor, which has only caused more trauma and diseases in our community?
Well, that's a good question. Sure, I think any time that you begin to collect information, whether it's near death or extraterrestrial contact or whatever, once you begin that codification process, or could be, you know, religious revelations or religious witnesses, you know, you begin that codification process, and yeah, absolutely, I think that that's the beginnings of a dogma. I also know that today, you know, once you tap into, you know, psychic awareness and a quantum level, I think that slows down the dogma real quickly, because you know that new information is always forthcoming, that, you know, the belief system that you possess today, you may or may not possess tomorrow, and chances are that that belief system of yours is going to transform. And, you know, one thing we haven't talked about much today is religion. You know, certainly the extraterrestrial knowledge that's coming in through experiencers is going to have a great impact on religion. You know, the Brookings Institute study in the 60s, that was the issue for them. And, you know, no mistakes, you know.
Well, I'm a little more harsh than that. I think it cannot have any effect on anything that's true. It can only have a negative effect on, instead of religion, how about let's call it refiction. There's a great deal.
That's going to be a huge impact.
Well, there's a great deal of what gets called religion that really is theological fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it, but a great deal of in a lot of cases. And it's going to have a huge impact on that.
And religion, in terms of our culture, has been one of the places that we as a species have been able to talk about God. And talk about love and forgiveness. I mean, those are important topics as we progress as humans. I mean, peace, love, forgiveness, God. I mean, the God particle, whatever you want to call it, in a scientific way. I think that's the one place in society that we, you know, have been able to talk about those concepts. And this whole merging of science and spirituality is, as far as I'm concerned, just going to be an era of unparalleled progress and enlightenment for all humanity on this earth.
Well, I don't disagree with that. And I really do think we are watching the old paradigm, which is at its core materialistic. We're watching the old paradigm in its death spasms right now.
That's because we as a species are changing on a subatomic level. And once you begin to change on that subatomic quantum level, our material worldview is, it literally disappears. And yet, how do we hold things together as a culture? Well, you know, whether it's the internet or, you know, an app on your cell phones, culture always reinvents itself. And we, as, you know, persons who've had contact and embrace our contact, we are going to be one of the definers. Our life is an app, in a sense. We are an extraterrestrial app. And
yeah,
how we live our lives and how we model it is an application.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. That's good. Well, listen, we're almost out of time. I want to tell everyone, first of all, if you cannot remember exoconsciousness.com, you can click on Rebecca's picture on my website. It will take you to her website.
Thank you. Oh, that's great.
And tell us again about the conference very quickly.
The conference is going to be held on April 10th, and it's an exciting conference. In other words, what we've been talking about today, it's going to be about embracing contact. That's the title, actually, of the conference. It's not going to be about convincing anybody about, you know, there are UFOs or there are extraterrestrials. It's moving beyond that information into saying, you know, we are embracing our contacts, and what kind of ramifications and applications and benefits does that hold for us as a species. So it's going to be April 10th. It's going to be at the Scottsdale Cottonwoods Resort, and please come. It's going to be an exciting time. It's going to be a very unique and different kind of conference.
All right. I want to thank you for being with me tonight, Dr. Hardcastle. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I close out the show. Folks, we've got a great week for you this week. As you've seen from tonight's show, every show interesting and controversial. If it's not controversial, we're not going to bring it to you. And you know why. That means it's dead. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me anything you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.